Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is SiriusXM. Welcome to Tell Me Everything, bringing good trouble to the right-wing bubble. I'm John Fugelsang. Chris Hauselt's our executive producer. Thea Harper is producing this thing out of Brooklyn. And Texas has passed this law requiring age verification for access to any adult websites. So Pornhub has pulled out of the entire Lone Star State. Thank you, Pornhub, for showing folks in Texas, especially conservative men, exactly what they get when they vote for the fake Christians they vote for. Let's do a show. Tonight's show is brought to you by the law firm of Harris, Bragg, Smirnoff, and Schumer. Normally, I like to begin this show with this rant, picking one story of the day and just going off on it and getting y'all to call in and join us. But there's way too much to get to. First of all, let's try and count down the stories, the top five. But let's begin and end on a high note. And the historic high note I want to begin on is the vice president making history today again, visiting a Planned Parenthood clinic in Minnesota. Media, you didn't need to call it an abortion clinic all day. Planned Parenthood does a lot more than just abortion care. But of course, the people who write these headlines are usually men like me. So she went to a Planned Parenthood clinic in Minnesota. That's important to show solidarity and support for all the Americans who are fighting for reproductive freedom. And she declared there was a health crisis demanding that we become a nation that trusts women. This visit to a Planned Parenthood clinic is the first ever by a president or a vice president to any clinic that provides abortion services. This is the heaviest move the campaign has made yet to make women's rights a defining issue in the 2024 election. And you might be wondering, okay, but why Minnesota? Well, the state offers broad abortion access. That's offensive. It should be women abortion access, broad access to abortion. And has become a safe haven to many people who live in other states that have passed bans on abortion in the last couple of years since Roe was overturned. It is a state where women are forced to travel to receive care. Here's the vice president explaining why she chose to visit Planned Parenthood in Minnesota.
So many of you have asked, why am I here at this facility in particular? And I will tell you, it is because right now in our country, we are facing a very serious health crisis. And the crisis is affecting many, many people in our country, most of whom are, frankly, silently suffering.
So this was big and it'll upset all the right people. And the campaign is going to spend every day reminding women voters and, you know, men who care about women voters that it was the 3 Supreme Court appointments by the former host of Celebrity Apprentice, Donald Trump. 3 Supreme Court appointments, 2 of which are illegitimate. Amy Coney Barrett, ironically, is the only legitimate one. And it was those choices that led to the dismantling of Roe v. Wade. And by Donald Trump Supreme Court picks, I mean the Federalist Society picked them, and someone told Donald Trump, this is what you want, and you're very handsome, sir. So he agreed. This is what ended a 50-year constitutional right to an abortion. Hillary Clinton got more votes for president than any white man or orange man in history, and it wasn't good enough to win. And so the Celebrity Apprentice guy won, even though he came in second, and that's why you ladies have fewer rights in several states than your mothers and grandmothers. Understand? Here, VP Harris begs us to be a nation that trusts women, not one that strips away their bodily autonomy.
In this environment, these attacks against an individual's right to make decisions about their own body are outrageous and in many instances just plain old immoral. How dare these elected leaders believe they are in a better position to tell women what they need, to tell women what is in their best interest. We have to be a nation that trusts women.
Meanwhile, a lot of people got upset today because they heard that Donald Trump's New York City hush money case is going to be delayed a minimum of 30 days. And that's how it is. That's how Trump wants it. That's how Putin wants it. These things will happen. He's not going to get away with every delay, though, and he didn't today. But Alvin Bragg says this one comes because Department of Justice officials in the Southern District of New York failed to provide certain documents to Trump's legal team. So the trial will start. It's not going to start this month. Hopefully it will start, good God, in late April. I'm not worried about these trials being delayed yet. Are you? Does it concern you? I'm not worried for two reasons. One, if these trials are going on, especially the most important trial in history, the Jack Smith election interference federal case, if these are going on in the late summer or the fall or, I don't know, during Election Day, I'm very comfortable with that, competing with the campaign for media attention. But more than that, I've been saying it for a long time. These cases are important. It's important that we see if the rule of law can function in these times. It's important that history knows that the majority of Americans stood up and tried to do something. But we can't rely on these cases, all four of them. But keep in mind, Trump's already lost two big cases this year. There's four more coming. But the courts aren't going to save us. There's nothing he can be convicted of that's probably going to keep him off the ballot in November. It is, at the end of the day, going to be up to us and democracy. Batman and Black Panther and Gandhi and Jesus and Democrats, none of it's going to save us. Robert Mueller, Jack Smith, you know Merrick Garland's not. It's going to come down to the same thing it comes down to every year, high voter turnout. So while the Trumpers were celebrating this, the same day, Judge Aileen Cannon denied Donald Trump's motion to dismiss his classified documents trial, which is another setback for him because he is a loser, even with his own judge. And again, let's be proud to live in a country where a guilty motherfucker who's a millionaire at birth can still grow up to hire his own judge in a criminal case. It's a beautiful story. Now, the big story of the day, maybe not as big as Kamala Harris visiting a women's health clinic, but Chuck Schumer did something that no one else in government could do. He put out a warning to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his coalition government, declaring they are a direct threat to the continued long-term safety of Israel. He did this in the context of being a long-time supporter of Israel. Indeed, the Democratic Party's most avid supporter of Israel for decades. His speech today, Axios said, calling for a new government in Israel landed like an earthquake, delivering a huge shock to the already tense U.S.-Israel relationship. I mean, that's putting it mildly, Axios. This was the harshest criticism yet. Schumer essentially came out today and called for Israelis to hold elections and choose a new government that can better handle the threat of Hamas. This is the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in the history of this country, friends. And Chuck Schumer has had one of the longest and closest and, dare I say, most loyal relationships with Prime Minister Netanyahu of any U.S. politician. This was a big shock. Here is Senator Chuck Schumer taking the floor of the Senate today and offering the strongest rebuke yet of Israeli leadership by American leadership.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has all too frequently bowed to the demands of extremists like Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, and the settlers in the West Bank. I have known Prime Minister Netanyahu for a very long time. While we have vehemently disagreed on many occasions, I will always respect his extraordinary bravery for Israel on the battlefield as a younger man. I believe in his heart, he has his highest priority is the security of Israel. However, I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel.
Boom. That's it. We've been saying it for a long time here. Netanyahu has clung to power for two decades saying, I'm the only one to keep you safe. And he didn't. And he was warned about this. And he still didn't. And a year ago, these protests were just liberals and young people. Now every level of Israeli society is protesting him. And he's going to keep this war going to keep his own job. His attempts to fiddle with his country's Supreme Court to keep him in power didn't work. So now it's got to be perpetual war for perpetual employment. But Schumer said no one expects Prime Minister Netanyahu to do the things that must be done to break the cycle of violence, preserve Israel's credibility on the world stage, and work toward a two-state solution. Now you, to understand how big this is, Schumer is so loyal to Netanyahu for years, and liberals have been on his case about this for a long time. Remember back in March of 2015 when Netanyahu came to Congress and he gave that speech attacking the nuclear deal that was not Obama's nuclear deal? It was negotiated by many countries. We achieved a peace deal with Iran. And our own military kept saying Iran was complying with the terms of the deal. And Donald Trump tore that peace deal up. But before it was signed, Netanyahu came to Congress to scream about it because a wartime consigliere wants no chance of peace. If there's peace, guys like Netanyahu, guys like Hamas, they're out of a job. Schumer was one of the only Senate Democrats who didn't criticize Netanyahu's speech against the Iran nuclear deal. And then a few months later, Schumer was one of the only Democrats in the Senate to vote against the deal. He sided with Netanyahu over his own president, Barack Obama. So I imagine Netanyahu did not think Chuck Schumer would ever be the guy to stand on the Senate floor and call him one of the four major obstacles to peace, along with Hamas, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, and the radical right-wing Israelis. Because, friends, it's always the radical right-wing Muslims, radical right-wing Jews, radical right-wing Christians who think God likes them so much, it's okay if I commit any violence I see fit. Here, Schumer suggested that only a massive shift in policy and leadership is going to keep Israel safe right now and after this conflict ends.
If he were to disavow Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and kick them out of his government governing coalition, that would be a real meaningful step forward. But regrettably, there's no reason to believe Prime Minister Netanyahu would do that. He won't disavow Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir in their calls for Israelis to drive Palestinians out of Gaza and the West Bank. He won't commit to a military operation in Rafah that prioritizes protecting civilian life. He won't engage responsibly in discussions about a day-after plan for Gaza and a longer-term pathway to peace.
As you can imagine, Republicans freaked out, smelled blood in the water, thought they could do anything possible to cast the Democrats as being anti-Israel. But this is the highest-ranking Jewish government official in our country's history. McConnell, he did a social media post and wrote that the main obstacles to peace are genocidal terrorists and corrupt Palestinian Authority leaders who reject peace deals. But Schumer had already addressed that, and McConnell knows it. McConnell knows that Schumer addressed Hamas today. But McConnell also knows his base, drooling on the clicker, are never going to know that Schumer called out Hamas because the news they consume won't show Schumer calling out Hamas. But Chuck Schumer criticized Hamas and the Palestinians who support the group that attacked Israel last fall. They killed 1,200 people. They took 250 hostages. He even called out Americans who have been trying to recast Hamas as righteous freedom fighters.
Jewish Americans and Israelis alike have been appalled and hurt at efforts to rebrand Hamas, which is designated by the United States as a terrorist organization, as noble resistance or freedom fighters. Attempts to excuse their horrific actions against both Israelis and Palestinians are morally repugnant. A permanent ceasefire, effective immediately, would only allow Hamas to regroup and launch further attacks on Israeli civilians. There can never be a two-state solution if Hamas has any significant power.
So there you go. Not exactly pro-Hamas. Now, politically, this is fascinating because young people are mad at Joe Biden. He's not calling for a ceasefire. It's very frustrating, but this is not how Joe Biden operates. He's a deal-making guy behind the scenes. He's not going to come out and scream what a dick Joe Manchin is. He's going to smile and negotiate harder and get Joe Manchin to finally agree to something. So he's not going to do it. But Kamala Harris came out and called for a ceasefire. And what we saw today with Leader Schumer is going to create more space for other Democrats in Congress to start voicing their criticism of the Israeli civilian government much more vocally. Now, we imposed sanctions today on three extremist Israeli West Bank settlers, three individuals, because the deal with the West Bank and why there probably never can be what we like to aspirationally call a two-state solution. You have your crazy far right wing extremist Muslims, but you also have these crazy far right wing extremist Israeli settlers, and these guys were attacking Palestinians because it's not a clean border in the West Bank. It's a little island of Palestinian territory here, little island of Palestinian territory there. The plan has always been to drive them out, to pressure them into leaving their land. And today the State Department announced sanctions and visa restrictions against three different people and their farms who attacked and expelled Palestinian shepherds from hundreds of acres as recently as this last summer. These sanctions block these men and their settlements from using the U.S. financial system, and they bar American citizens from dealing with them. I know, right? Sanctions against three guys? But it's something, and it's weird, and it's fascinating that we're doing this. So they asked the State Department spokesman, Matt Miller, about this. He said, there is no justification for extremist violence against civilians or forcing families from their homes, whatever their national origin, ethnicity, race, or religion. But then the reporters asked Matt Miller of the State Department, what's going on with this Schumer speech? Because these words he's saying sound an awful lot like something Joe Biden would want to say, but can't. Give a listen to Matt Miller responding at the State Department.
There are members of the executive branch who have said roughly similar, if not exactly the same thing, over the course of the last several months. And so I think there is a suspicion out there that Senator Schumer was putting out publicly what had been being said privately.
No, that is not the case. These are statements made by Senator Schumer, not by the Biden administration.
Okay. So there's no frustration in the administration with Prime Minister Netanyahu and his government.
Look, there are a number of things that we want to see Israel do differently. We've made that quite clear. I've said it from this podium, as you know, a number of times, and we've made quite clear in direct conversations with the Prime Minister. But I don't have anything beyond that.
So Schumer said that he told the White House yesterday he was going to give the speech about Israel, but he didn't give him a copy of the speech and he didn't ask for their permission to do it. And apparently the White House did not encourage him, but they didn't stop him. Axios reported that several officials were surprised how harsh he actually was. Here's some good news. The first humanitarian aid ship from Cyprus was set to arrive in Gaza today with more than 500,000 meals from Chef Jose Andres World Central Kitchen. The crews were trying to prepare a jetty at a secret location to unload open arms, and that's the first ship bringing aid to the region. They're a nonprofit. They said they're working with the UAE, Cyprus, and the international community to open the maritime aid corridor. Once there, we'll distribute the food to communities on the brink of famine. The Israeli military did a comprehensive security check. 200 tons of rice, flour, beans, lentils, and canned meats. The Israeli military had to say, okay, it's clean. You can give this food to the starving people. So, politically, what's going to happen? Mitch McConnell was calling this grotesque and hypocritical, the comments of Schumer. Mike Johnson said he's going to try to have a vote now on a standalone Israel aid package so they can try to make the Democrats look anti-Israel. But Bernie Sanders came out today and said, we give $3.5 billion a year to Israel. So this is very much an issue of concern for the American people, and Senator Schumer has every right to speak out on it. And finally, speaking of Bernie, he may have given us the biggest surprise of anyone, bigger than Kamala Harris, bigger than Chuck Schumer, when Bernie Sanders said the sort of thing that might have been said to help get liberals back into the fold on the side of Biden. But Bernie is a man who never stops fighting for working Americans, whatever you think of him. And today, he called for a reduction in the American work week to 4 days, but without a loss of pay.
As a result of the extraordinary technological transformations that we have seen in recent years, American workers are now over 400% more productive than they were in the 1940s. Extraordinary. Technology has made working people far more productive. And what has been the result of all of that productivity increase for working people? Almost all of the economic gains of that technological transformation have gone straight to the top, while wages for workers have remained stagnant or even worse. While CEOs today are making 350 times as much as their average employees, workers throughout the country are seeing their family life fall apart as they are forced to spend more and more time at work. They're missing their kids' birthday parties, Little League baseball games, and just the time they need with their family. And what stresses them out even further is that after spending all of this time at work, many of them still are living paycheck to paycheck, can't take care of their basic needs.
Now, you can say that Schumer and Vice President Harris and Bernie were all working in concert, that all three of these appearances today were somehow related to the campaign. And that may be true, but they were also working to show the stark contrast in ideology between the Democrats and Republicans at a time when the media keeps running reports saying both sides have old men that Americans don't want to vote for. That's the old story. The real story is the profound difference in morality between these two teams. And let me ask, you think you'd be more productive with a 4-day work week? Would it make your life better? Or would it hurt the American economy? That's our question for the evening at 866-997-4748. And I will put that question to the great Bob Henley when he joins us right after this. We're at 866-997-GRIT. This is Progress After Dark.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. Robert Henley is an award-winning investigative journalist who, during a 40-year career, has found himself covering public policy from everything to corruption, homeland security, immigration, the economy, environmental policy, and more. He is a journalist, senior reporter at WNYC for 12 years, and his stuff's been published everywhere from Christian Science Monitor to the New York Times. You've seen him everywhere from the Miami Herald, PBS NewsHour, Salon, and 60 Minutes. It is always a pleasure and an honor to welcome one of the finest reporters on labor in this country, Robert Henley. Back to the show.
Thanks.
Hello, sir.
It's been at least 2 New York minutes.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. Thank you very much. We are the worse for your absence. Before we get to everything going on, I'm sure you heard Bernie Sanders' comments today introducing a bill in the Senate calling for a 4-day work week. And I wonder, we've never talked about it, Bob. Do you think that people would be more productive? What do you think the effect on an economy would be?
So it's very ironic that this was what the air traffic controllers asked Ronald the country for back in the 1980s when he banished them and demolished their union. And what is so stunning, if you go back and look at what was going on in air traffic control, it reads just like the New York Times today, John. And so all the same conditions of burnout and of the stress involved with managing thousands and thousands of lives and planes, that was taking a toll. And back then, the air traffic controllers recognized the need for a four-day week. And so it was something that the UAW went for this time. They had a lot of damage to undo, like a generation of givebacks in second-tier workforces, so they didn't get that four-day work week. But its time will come. I think that one of the things that we've realized is that the entire social contract around work is in the process of being renegotiated live.
Yes, sir, it
after
is.
After a mass death event.
Correct. I mean, all these corporations, Bob, that have been working hybrid or remotely for a couple of years now, and I mean, a lot of them are forcing the workers to come back, but a lot of corporations are saying, why are we paying for all this square footage of office space if we don't need to?
Exactly. And so there was also the Great Resignation, 45 million some odd people, four times the size of the AFL-CIO, all members in, decided they didn't like their job. And so one of the things that President Biden's economy has provided for is the opportunity and breathing space for people of certain upper middle income and middle income jobs to move around and to have some mobility. And we're starting to see that produce improved incomes. Of course, there's a long way to go. And when Joe Manchin and the Republicans pulled the plug on things like the earned income child tax credit, they also eviscerated the safety net that it and so there were so many people, tens of millions of Americans were caught off by that really quick, reflexive desire to basically roll back the social contract. And so you are seeing dislocation. We see one in four children in poverty in New York City. And we see in places like Trenton, the place the president visited in Milwaukee, those places really got a 1-2 punch of Medicaid being unraveled, of the eviction and foreclosure moratoriums being suspended, and then, of course, ending the earned income child tax credit. That was just a body blower to the working poor.
Bob, I'll get off this topic in a second, but ThredUp says that when they switched to a four-day week, it cut their corporate turnover rate in half, which means a lot less money spent on recruitment and new hires and bonuses and packaging people out when they leave. And Bernie said today, it's not a radical idea. Today, American workers are over 400% more productive than they were in the 1940s, and yet millions of Americans are working longer hours for lower wages than they were decades ago. This seems to be the kind of point that, like, a smart politician would recognize. Liberals and conservatives would agree on this.
Well, one of the things that happened in the 1970s, you can see it on a graph, productivity continued to go up exponentially because of technology. And then what ended up happening was wages actually remained flat or declined as the corporate structure introduced household debt. Hi, want to take the kids on vacation? Used to be pay for it in cash out of the cookie jar. Now you can pay for it on the layaway plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me bring it closer to home, Mr. Henley, if I could, because we talk a lot about the mayor of New York, Mr. Adams, and I think it's great that our city is leading the world, being the first major city to have a mayor serving on an outpatient basis, and it's fascinating to watch. We have a lot of fun. There's a lot I don't understand, Bob, about this man and about
goodness,
his associates.
You have moved into the really critical category since I last checked.
Well, there's a lot I don't understand about Eric Adams, and it might be fun to speculate, but I do want to talk about what he's doing in terms of labor issues in the city, because you have a great piece in WorkBites.com where just this week he came and reiterated his full support for a full pay parity between the fire department EMS workforce, which is mostly composed of women and non-white people, while the firefighting side of the same department is mostly white guys. What a shock. Those two groups in the same entity aren't paid the same.
Well, one of the things, this goes back, of course, to, and this is a problem throughout the country. If you want to know just how sick American medicine is, look at the status of the EMS workforce. The lowest paid and the ones that we are most reliant on and that are most essential to survive are the very people that this system pays the least. And in New York City, you're talking about like tens of thousands of dollars of difference. And also, incredibly, firefighters, sanitation officers, and police officers have unlimited sick time, while the EMS has like 13 days. And you burn through that very quickly in the middle of an pandemic where you might be able to get COVID a couple of times. So there is a plantation system. It's alive and well in New York City, and it's in the form of EMS, FDNY, and the mayor did run on a commitment to level the playing field. What's happening, which is bad news for tourists or anybody else who lives in the city, is that EMS people are just staying on the job for 3 years and then transferring to the fire department for, quote-unquote, a promotion. That means that it's a young job, and unfortunately, we know from peer-reviewed science that you get to your sweet spot about saving people's lives and bringing them back from the dead at about 6 years. And so we have a system that makes it less likely that we'll have those people around with the experience that can keep us on the right side of life itself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really happy to... I struggle with it every day, sir. But I am happy to like talk about Eric Adams as a legislator and as an administrator, not just rumors and wacky stuff. I mean, he went farther than this. And again, you cover the kind of stories that the major media is not going to cover. I didn't know he had just become the first New York City mayor to attend the annual Women's Pay Equity Rally in City Hall this week. But he also went a step further than the fire department. He came out and talked about how law enforcement has incredible pay parities based on race if you measure between the NYPD, but then look at what they're paid in the corrections and probation department.
Well, and this is something where he did break new ground. It's been known for anyone who follows civil service and public union contracts that the PBA is like platinum, and then when it comes to corrections, which has majority people of color, a dramatically different kind of situation. It's inferior. One of the other most unsung aspects is the probation officers. In New York City, we have a few hundred probation officers. These are primarily African-American women who have to have a college degree, have to carry a gun, know how to use it, and take in violent felons for the wonderful sum of $45,000 a year. And so if they were a detective, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars more. What happens here is that if you're a person who has a college degree and can handle a sidearm, you're going to be able to pick the city you're going to be able to go to pursue a career in law enforcement. So right at the time that we want to having alternative to incarceration, which is what probation officers provide, we are underpaying them, and we can't hold on to them. So it's funny. New York City, for a pro-labor town, has a lot of these idiosyncratic things. They have, for instance, 125,000 nonprofit social service workers helping the homeless, who themselves, 60% of them, need things like food stamps. How did that happen?
Amazing. Amazing. What have the unions said, Bob, about Mayor Adams' efforts?
So the EMT unions asked me, DC 37, Local 2507, EMS, paramedics, and fire inspectors, and the 3621, the FDNY EMS officers, they're thrilled. The last occupant of Gracie Mansion, Bill de Blasio, some people call him a faux aggressive, other people call him comrade. He basically said that while he respected EMS, their work was different. In other words, that it was, you know, didn't merit the same level of pay. That, of course, got a full-page ad from EMS in the New York Times coming after the mayor. So this is progress in the sense that the sitting mayor has owned it. The thing that is kind of disconcerting is that all of the unions that are part of the Municipal Labor Council have permitted this plantation system to exist. And it's troubling because when a police officer is down, when a firefighter is down, when a construction worker is down, who is going to be retrieving them? It is going to be EMS. So it is kind of disconcerting that for all this solidarity, they kind of let them twist in the wind for, I guess, the last 30
years. It's a great point, man. It's a great point. Can I shift over to another one of your recent articles from City and State, New York? Well, you are one of the best reporters on the impacts of COVID-19 on labor and on populations and public health. And for those of us who lived through the pandemic here, we remember every night you'd come out at 7 p.m. Out of your window and bang pots and pans to show our appreciation of one group, the healthcare workers. And as you've pointed out, over 3,600 American healthcare workers died as a consequence of their exposure to COVID-19 in just the first year. And 453 of those workers were from New York alone, because we began the pandemic with the worst death rate and hospitalization rate on the planet. So in right. your new piece, healthcare unions in New York are fighting back for better pay. It's amazing to see that after the pandemic, our healthcare professionals have gotten really organized, because they've decided they deserve to be paid rather than just have pots and pans played for them.
Exactly. And that's the City and State piece. And that one of the things that's happened is that really the only institution with the courage and maybe the interest to hold America's for-profit healthcare scarcity system accountable has been the labor union. The government wants to print it didn't happen. They'd like to bury the mask in the glove compartment. They don't want to ever own their role in it. And so it has been healthcare unions. We saw this with SEIU against Kaiser Permanente, a three-day strike of 85,000 people.
Yeah.
And in 3 days, it was solved because we have a competent acting labor secretary in Julie Hsu. She got into the room, and they didn't leave until they came up with primarily improvement in staffing. The thing to understand is that the unions are going to the mat. Yeah, they want better wages, but it's about staffing. It's about ending the scarcity mentality where you've got 13 and 14 patients per nurse per shift. And so they're really acting in our interest when they stand up to these Fugazi nonprofits that are, like the case of the Robert Wood Johnson strike here in New Brunswick, nonprofit nominally, quote unquote. They pay the CEO over $16 million in the second year of the pandemic.
Of course they did.
And the nurses were out from August until December, and they were really driving home the fact that they want adequate staffing. Right now, they say there's a nursing shortage. There's over a million nurses that are credentialed in this country sitting on the sidelines because they don't want the moral injury of not being able to do the job they were trained to do the way they need to do it.
That's it. That's it. Are you optimistic? That bad, huh?
No. I would say that I am, in the sense that I've been doing a lot of reporting on the Poor People's Campaign nationally, tracking what Reverend Barber and Reverend Liz Theo Harris are doing. The Poor People's Campaign following up on the tradition of Martin Luther King's Poor People Campaign from the late 60s. They are looking to galvanize the 85 million low-wealth and low-wage voters in this country that make up a third of the electorate. Only 47% voted in 2016 when they were focused on and spoken with. The reason why they didn't participate in better numbers, they told the analysts, was because they didn't hear anything that was relevant to them in the campaign conversation. In places like Michigan, Trump won in 2016 by 10,000 votes. 970,000 low-wealth and low-wage voters sat that race out in that state alone. That's what I'm telling you, John. Like, if these people show up, then the Republicans can do, we can do what the courts seemingly are incapable of doing.
Can I ask you a court-related question, Bob? Because I always try to cover as many of your pieces as I can, and you got a piece in Insider and NJ, Bonds That Bind, Chubb Tosses Trump a Lifeline. I'm so happy to talk to you about this, because there hasn't been a lot of major corporate media attention. But as we know, last week, Donald Trump, former host of Celebrity Apprentice, he was really looking in a pretty tight spot, because he owed $500 million in fines for his various crimes. And I think, Bob, we all knew Trump was never going to sell a property and pay for his crimes himself. He turned to the Federal Insurance Company, a subsidiary of the Chubb Corporation, to post his $91.6 million bond. Bob, what should people know about Chubb?
Okay, so the thing is, like, it's that $91 million judgment that has to go and be set aside because he's going to appeal the Eugene Carroll lawsuit. It's important to know that we should not be surprised. America has a hard time holding old white rich men accountable. Whoa, there's a headline.
Exactly.
But it is important to consider that even Evan Greenberg, who is the president of Chubb, was appointed to an international trade group in 2018 by Donald Trump. And so Chubb is also this massive multinational. And it gets at an underlying problem where the United States has fostered and nurtured all these massive corporate behemoths whose behavior is like, you know, it's their, we're Lilliputians and they're Gulliver striding this world. And so...
yeah.
The accountability here is totally lacking. I am glad to see that there's a little brand problem for Chubb. And Mr. Greenberg is used to pontificating through his annual letters and, you know, at the likes of these global conferences, has had to, like, get down into the common dirt and explain himself. But this is an underlying problem that we've had here, that we've permitted these corporations, and our tax policy actually promotes it. The concentration of capital and the consolidation of corporate entities is something promoted by the American tax system.
Yeah.
We can't help ourselves. And that's why this great wealth inequality is the way it is. Robert Reich makes this point all the time.
He does. He made it beautifully today. But is it a bit icky, Bob, that Donald Trump made Chubb CEO on the White House Advisory Committee for Trade Policy and Negotiations, and that guy just bailed him out to almost $100 million, to say nothing of the fact that Greenberg is extremely warm and friendly with Xi Jinping and the Chinese government. And as you point out, he said the U.S. needs to tone down the rhetoric and symbolism around Taiwan. He's incredibly pro-China. And of course, we just found out that Donald Trump was secretly on the Chinese government payroll while president and had a secret Chinese bank account, which would ordinarily disqualify anyone from being president.
Exactly. And I would say that the other piece of this that was so fascinating is Mr. Greenberg gives one of those academic judgments several months before he then gets a chance to introduce the Chinese leader. And so this is the problem. I do believe that it started when we pardoned Richard Nixon because we thought a fall from grace was good enough. Well, look, he's sad. He lost the presidency. Oh, that's okay. He had a fall from grace. Go into Saddle River and have fun. Like, that was a mistake, and we've compounded it, and we've made a presidency on steroids. The damn thing is too big.
Yeah.
And so now you have them cross-pollinating with the very big multinational. And our democracy looks really puny right now.
Mr. Henley, we got to hit our break. I'm going to share all of these articles. Go ahead, Bob.
Nothing. I'm just laughing. You make me laugh.
Well, I could talk to you all day, but I'm going to share all of these articles. Bob, what's the best way for our listeners to follow you, to keep up with your kind of journalism? Because the corporate media is not going to give it to us.
At Stuck Nation, because when all we've got is Trump and Biden, we are.
Bob, thank you so very much. We appreciate it. You're the best. We'll be right back in just a moment with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. So good to have you with us. Let me quote Robert Reich today, who wrote, "What do these corporations have in common? Netflix, Ford, Tesla, T-Mobile, Duke Energy, Dish Network, MetLife, Dominion Energy, United States Steel. In recent years, these corporations all paid their executives more than they paid in taxes. This is what a corporate rigged system looks like. Dear God, let us use all the science and technology we have to make Robert Reich live forever." We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Mitch in Kent State, welcome, sir. You're on SiriusXM Progress. How are you, Mitch?
Oh, thank you, John. Appreciate it. By the way, we have our New York tickets. We're ready to go.
You're going to come to see the Sexy Liberal Tour at Town Hall in New York City?
August 3rd.
August 3rd. I better memorize that. I can't wait. We have never played Town Hall before. It's such a legendary place. That's where I first met David Crosby for the first time, and I'm so thrilled that we're going to bring our kind of filth to that beautiful hallowed hall.
Looking forward to it. And by the way, John, one quick one. Happy anniversary to Lady Madonna / Hey Bulldog video. The story behind that is kind of clever. They of course, the Beatles were innovators as far as making music videos, but they were actually doing Hey Bulldog at the time when it was being filmed, but Lady Madonna was used as a song with the film. It was kind of strange, but they, if you don't see the mouths moving to the words that much. You always see they're behind the, you know, the cameras are kind of shoveled around.
What you're saying, the Beatles shot themselves playing Lady Madonna for the Lady Madonna video, but then they used footage of them performing Lady Madonna and passed it off as a Hey Bulldog video.
Hey Bulldog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's still good stuff. But
on. Great songs. Great. I didn't even know that was and by the way, when the Beatles Channel launched, they had us promoted on the old show by playing Hey Bulldog every hour, which was just great because that is one of the most underrated Beatles songs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I got the Yellow Submarine soundtrack, I said, but that and It's All Too Much.
Well, that's the thing. It's All Too Much is, for my money, the single most underrated song the Beatles ever put out. It is a George Harrison masterpiece. If that song had been put out a few months earlier on Sgt. Pepper, it would be considered a classic by the Beatles and every kid would know it. But again, you got to have the Yellow Submarine soundtrack. And that's usually like everyone's 12th favorite Beatles album. So most folks don't have it.
Right, right. And there's an extended version of that also that came out later. There's a couple verses that were added to it, but that's just a George Harrison dreamscape.
It's a masterpiece.
There, that song.
Masterpiece of a song. Yeah.
Exactly. John, we'll go to the 4-day work week. I'm retired now, but I was in retail all my life. And back in the day, I mean, I sold furniture, appliances, things like that. And, of course, we were on commission. And, matter of fact, there was a point at some time when we were just straight commission. So you were basically working, you know, I'm not saying for free, but you got a base salary out of it, you know, enough to, you know, get by. And then, of course, what you sold is what was your bread and butter.
Yeah.
But, I'm not, you know, with some jobs, the 4-day work week would work. I mean, there are some jobs that maybe not work so well.
Of course. I mean, no one's saying we bring the school to a 4-day school week. We don't like the idea that much. I mean, there's plenty of jobs where, you would not be able to get that much time off. Absolutely. But, you know, and the other question is, would it be better for our overall economy or might it slow down the overall economy? It's really hard to say, especially because we are so in transition right now with people moving all over the place to hybrid work.
Right, right. Like I say, it would depend on type of work, I guess. But of course, I was, you know, I was there, you know, 5-6 days a week anyway. So I just loved the business anyway. But it, you know, of course, the more you're there, the more chances you are of you know, selling more, more merchandise, and
true,
of course, the, you know, more profit. my original call, John, was...
This was a sidetrack? None of this was the point of your call? All right. Well, let's begin the conversation now here in minute 15. Go ahead, Mitch. What's on your mind? Nice to have you.
That was the tease. That was the tease. It was a thing about, you know, if Trump loses this year, okay, I'm just doing a hypothetical here. Unless he dies or is in jail, I guess he still could run in 28. Is that correct?
I hope he runs in 28. I would love to see Donald Trump in his early 80s, you know, with his oxygen tag running for president. Yes, if he loses now and runs in 2028, we would finally have a chance to see a man lose the popular vote for a fourth time. That's never happened. Trump's running to tie John Calhoun for losing the popular vote a third time. And I think he can do it. Only he can do it. People are walking up to him all the time saying, Mr. President, I can't believe it. You're the one person who could lose the American people's vote three times. People are saying it.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, his followers of the cult, I just wonder, would they still hang on to that if they had to wait
more
year? I don't know.
They would.
Kind of, you know.
But here's my whole question. I don't care about these polls. I really don't. Someone explain to me what group that Donald Trump didn't win in 2020 is he more popular with now? Because I don't see it. I know he's still way too popular. But the media spins this as being, oh, the American people don't like this choice. They don't like the two old guys. We want the younger candidate. That's a bullshit argument. This is the choice we have. We have the old guy with a stutter or the old guy who rapes people. That's the choice. You can have the guy who had an armed terrorist attack against our Capitol to overthrow our government and throw out the will of the American people, or this lunatic Biden who thinks women should have control of their own bodies. Where does it end? I mean, the both sides of them, the story is not the American people are unhappy with their choice. That's what the media is selling us. The story is 80 million of us are fucking batshit and are willing to punch ourselves in the face for this con man who wags his dick at everything decent. They're not Christians, they're not patriots, and they are not critical thinking voters. And that's the real story. But New York Times can't make that there. Holy shit, this many people are fucking marks for a con man will not help you in the long run, and the media will never stop chasing the Fox demographic, so we'll get more headlines saying, oh, Biden's old, and people wish they had a better choice this year.
Yeah, preach. But the more interesting aspect to it is what's going to happen to the Republican Party. I mean, you know, the Tea Party, yeah, that was a short-lived, unless that was a precursor of Trump, you know, the whole Tea Party idea.
I know. My instinct is to say the Republican Party will bounce back in a different form and be saner. But I said that after Bush, and they got worse. And you'll recall, none of us thought they could get worse than Bush. And holy shit. So, I mean, you got a party that's gone from Eisenhower to Nixon. And say what you want about Nixon, earned income tax credit. I mean, he had normalizing relations with China. Nixon would not be allowed in today's party. Then to Reagan, then to Bush, then to Bush, then to Trump. I mean, that logical progression means in 2028, their nominee is going to have to be Kid Rock's hepatitis. That's it. Kid Rock's hepatitis will run in the primaries and get the nomination.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And, you know, credit to Gary Trudeau and Doonesbury. Yeah, I go back to, I like to look at the old Doonesbury cartoons back in the day. And, you know, he was on the Trump thing back in the 80s. You know, he had a slew of strips there, you know, with Trump and his.
Yeah.
If everyone gets a chance. But when he was going through his Trump run there in the late 80s, just some good stuff there that even today holds up. You know,
did.
Foresight on everything. But
Gary Trudeau in the late 80s would put quotes from Donald Trump about how he doesn't understand this stupid Doonesbury cartoon, and he would take those quotes and put them on the book jackets for the Doonesbury publications, which was brilliant. Mitch, I gotta run. I got 90,000 people want to say hi, but please, I thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you. We're at 866-997-GRIT. Tim is on the line from Massachusetts. Tim, welcome to Progress. Tell me everything about Smirnoff.
Good evening, John. How's it going?
Great, sir. How are you?
Okay. Yeah, just on Smirnoff, I just thought your final comment on that was just a tad unfair to Chris Christie.
Oh, okay. I understand that. I understand. I don't want to be unfair to that. There's much more noxious specimens I could have chosen. But I feel like Trump is so corrosive, it's a little bit played out. So, again, Chris Christie told the truth this time, but it took Chris Christie till 2020 to figure this out. Fuck that. Come on.
Yeah, I will qualify that by saying perhaps not as unfair as the Jesse Waters comment was to pustules, but
he is a human pustule. Yes, he is. Again, he is 20 pounds of smegma in a 10-pound bag, that guy.
Okay. Well, seriously, that story probably should be as big as any story we've had today. And it's probably going to be a distant memory by the time the baseball season starts in a couple of weeks from today.
The Smirnoff story is going to be a distant memory?
Yeah.
You think it's going to be a distant memory for the Justice Department and the FBI?
I'd like to have more confidence that it will. I have as much confidence that it will be as I have confidence that the talking heads and the Smiths are going to do a joint reunion tour.
I agree with you on that. It's not likely, but here's the thing that gets me. Why did the feds release this information? Why did they leak this right now? They've known for a while that Donald Trump associates paid this rat $600,000 in 2020, and right away he started feeding Russian propaganda about Burisma and Hunter Biden to the Republicans and the FBI. They've known it for a while. They released it today. And again, the main thing to lean in on is the otherwise illegal activities that he was allowed to engage in. The FBI let this douchebag go out and break the law because they were very confident he'd bring in some bigger fish. And now they've indicted him for lying to everybody last month. Today they announce he was paid by Trump friends to smear the Bidens. There's a lot more here we haven't heard yet. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to say I have hope that it's going to lead to anything conclusive, but I will say the DOJ and especially Jack Smith knows a lot we don't know yet.
I'll hope so. Like I said, the baseball season does begin in 2 weeks, so I'll have something to calm myself with. Cause tonight was one of the more blood boiling.
Why? Why was tonight? Why was the
every
why the Smirnoff story?
Every that story and everything else.
There are some inspiring ones too, though. I think the vice president going to a woman's health clinic in Minnesota is huge. Okay.
The one inspiring, well, one that was very inspiring.
I think having Chuck Schumer, the highest ranking Jewish elected official in the history of the country, calling for the Israeli people to replace the Netanyahu regime is huge and deeply positive, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there's two. Yeah. But even in the Kamala Harris story, like you mentioned at the start of the show, the media put called it an abortion clinic, when Planned Parenthood does.
Yeah, the media called it an abortion clinic. But you know what? That's the shorthand. That's what they do. I expect that. Mm-hmm. I try not to because I'm a breeder man who's learned that there are a lot more than just abortions at Planned Parenthood. And anyone who cares knows that. So I expect the media to use language like that. Because, again, you'll get a click on abortion clinic more than you'll get a click on women's healthcare facility. But it doesn't underscore the historic significance of a sitting vice president. A sitting vice president going to a Planned Parenthood clinic is as significant historically and politically and ideologically as a sitting president going to a union picket line. I think it's huge.
Okay, very good. Just also, I'll be joining you as well in New York in August as well. So
you're going to be there. Tim, I'm so honored.
Yep, so I'll see you and Stephanie, Frangela, Hal, and lest we forget, Mitch.
Mitch will be there. We're going to have some special guests in New York as well. I'm curious, you're in Massachusetts. You're not going to come see us in Boston July 13th? You're going to come to the New York show?
I might go. The problem with the Boston show is I might still go, but I'm going to have to immediately get a train back home to Worcester afterwards.
I might not have time to stay. Come to New York and sleep in the bus station like the rest of us do. It's fine. It's very safe and hygienic.
I'll stay overnight in New York.
Right on, man. Yep. I thank you so much. Great. I look forward to seeing you.
Take care.
Right on. And by the way, this is where I got to tell you, the big tour is happening. April 13th, Minneapolis. April 27th, Philly. May 11th, Madison, Wisconsin. May 18th, Albuquerque. June 1st, Seattle. June 22nd, Denver. July 13th, Boston. July 27th, Atlanta. August 3rd, New York. We will be at Chicago for the Democratic Convention, doing a live show and maybe even some radio shows from there, too. But I haven't discussed that with Chris just yet. September 7th, Portland, Oregon. September 21st, in Durham, North Carolina. September 28th, Phoenix. October 12th, Kansas City, Missouri. First time we've ever played Kansas City. Last time I played Kansas City, I was with Margaret Cho at the LGBT Center, and we got picketed by Westboro Baptist Church. I don't know how you top that. The big Election Eve show will be November 2nd in L.A., and of course, Inauguration Weekend, January 18th. No matter who wins, we are playing Washington, D.C., and we are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT is our number. Let me go now on these phones to Charles in Miami. Charles, thank you so much for your patience on hold. You're on Progress. Charles, do we have you? Oh, no, Chris.
Unmute.
Unmute, Charles. Did we narcolepsy, Charles? Did we do it again?
We Charles, Charles.
You know, when Charles is on hold, I think we've learned we have to take his call right away because he will not stay awake for us. That's a man who'll pass out before the action starts. Charles.
You know, it's funny. It reminds me. There was a caller last night that I suggested we thought might be a Charles.
He was snoring. That guy was snoring.
Yeah. Well, I want to point out, I think he was in California, like San Diego, maybe.
Yeah, he was a lovely guy, too. He caught himself right away. And you know when you wake up and you try to convince everyone around that you're perfectly awake? He was good at it.
That's what I'm saying. His energy levels were off the charts for a person who was snoring 3 seconds earlier.
I know, but I've been there. I know how that is. I've been that guy before. I'm really good at, like on the plane, you wake up and someone comes by to bother you. And you're like, right away, I can be as conversant as I need to be and hide the fact that I'm fucking still asleep. That guy last night was great.
I can't do that. The first thing I always say when that happens to me is,
Charles. Wow. Well, if he falls asleep this early, I think I can say, I don't want Charles in charge of me. Did you hear about the New Orleans Police Department?
That's rough.
That's a bad one, I know, but Charles didn't hear it, so it's okay. Did you hear about what's going on with the New Orleans Police Department? I mean, like, they don't have enough on their hands. This is a situation that I'm surprised we haven't heard happening more. But apparently there's an army of rats that are making their way into the New Orleans PD evidence room and eating all the confiscated drugs. This was said by the superintendent to the city council's criminal justice committee this week, that the department needs to relocate their facilities to a downtown high rise to escape the conditions. The rats are eating our marijuana. They're all high. That is what NOPD Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick said. And in addition to the drug binge, the rats have left feces on desks. Cockroaches have moved in. The uncleanliness is off the charts. And it's a building from 1968. The department spent years trying to get a new location for their headquarters. On Monday, the city council approved a motion to authorize a pending 10-year lease agreement that would see the department moved to a tower in the center of the city. My question is, Chris, seriously, are they just saying this because the weed is somehow mysteriously disappearing from the storage room? I mean, have you heard in any other city where there's lots of weed that rats are eating cannabis? No. I kind of feel like I don't doubt that they're infested with rats. It's a 1968 building and these things happen. But come on now.
It's built in a swamp, for God's sakes.
For God's sakes. We expect the rats and we understand how tough that can be. But and you know what? Good detail. Good detail having rat feces on desks. I appreciate that. And cockroaches. I live in New York. I'm with you. But
why can't they,
come on, man. This is because the amount of marijuana in the evidence room is declining for some reason. And they're blaming it on the rats. Fight me on this.
These rats seem to be eating an ounce at a time. I don't understand that.
And it's strange. All the dime bags we have in storage are missing as well.
Very peculiar. The rats seem to have a preference for sour diesel.
Do they really?
Not this ditch weed.
I didn't know. I thought the rats were going for the sticky icky. Curiously enough, from the evidence room, all the bongs have been taken back to the rats' nests as well.
I don't know.
Sketchy.
I walked into the evidence room and I saw two rats there. And I was like, what are you doing here? They said, Dave's not here, man.
Now, of course, the New Orleans rats are much more paranoid than usual. Normally they were.
Why can't they flip that pot? Like, why?
That's what I always wonder.
Don't let it stack up like that.
I mean, these precincts are already have budgetary problems. I think logically, if you took all this confiscated weed and just sold it to high school kids, you'd solve a lot of problems in the community at once.
Like, why can't the city of New Orleans open up a dispensary in like D.C. or Chicago? And it's like,
I actually think people, I think there, I know guys who would want to buy weed in a dispensary if they knew it had been stolen from a cartel by a cop. They would think that was cool.
Yeah, you called Bad Lieutenant, you new strain called Bad Lieutenant, you know?
Yes, BLT. I'm all behind it. That's still one of my favorite movies. The Harvey Keitel one, although I like the Nicolas Cage New Orleans Bad Lieutenant that had nothing to do with the first Bad Lieutenant.
It's good in its own right.
Good movie, but it's like, it's one of those movies that's like, is it a sequel? Is it a spinoff? Is it a remake? No, just a totally different movie with the same title. That's it. God bless Nicolas Cage. And that was Herzog, right?
Abel Ferrara.
Oh, so it's the same director. Well, there you go then. That's why. I think the original Bad Lieutenant is a masterpiece. That was like maybe the third movie I took my wife to see on a date. But holy shit, that is, I mean, young people don't know this, but in the like 1992 to 94, there was a period where Harvey Keitel's penis appeared in more films than Michael Caine and Gene Hackman combined.
I stand corrected. It was Werner Herzog.
Made the non-sequel. That was Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Look, Werner Herzog makes a movie with Nicolas Cage. I'd want to be an intern on that. Of course I'm going to watch it. It's very good, but the original is a classic. I think Bad Lieutenant is the most Catholic movie I have ever seen. The entire movie. I mean, Abel Ferrara is mega Catholic, and that's why his films are so fucked up and violent. But this movie is so much about shame and guilt and grace and forgiveness. It is literally the most crazy Catholic movie ever, but no Catholic should ever watch it because it is a fucked up piece of brilliant cinema. Have you seen it, Chris? It's a great date movie.
A long time ago in my college days.
Yeah.
Not since. It's, you know, it's funny. I can't convince the old folks home I live in to watch Cinema Verite very often.
Your father-in-law's not a big fan of early Abel Ferrara, Harvey Keitel.
Is Judge Judy in it at all? Maybe that.
Judge Judy does not. There are judges in it. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it deals with the Mets blowing the playoffs in '88. That's a major, because the whole time he's betting on the Mets in the '88 playoffs, and so it is a bit of a baseball connection. But that's it. It's a great movie. Harvey Keitel's greatest performance ever, and even Jesus appears in this movie.
I remember that scene.
Yeah, that's the guy who played Buddy Holly on Broadway plays Jesus. Let me go to Norm in Tampa. We're getting really weird in the wee hours. Norm, thank you so much for your patience on hold. You're on Progress.
Right. This is Norm replacing Charles, you know.
Thank you very much.
Keeping awake. So I
you're the first runner-up. If Charles can't fulfill his duties, Norm is there. Okay.
Yes, right. I wanted to just mention one thing. That when you were talking last hour about the Native Americans and,
yes, sir,
and stuff like that. And I just hope people paid attention to that clip that Trump was doing about how Andrew Jackson was badly mistreated and his wife had died and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that, now you see the connection of what I've been saying about he made a comment about Adolf Hitler being right about a few things and stuff. And as we well know that Adolf Hitler had a close associate. We won't say that he was his friend, a close associate with the New York Klan, who's that again, that guy named Lathrop Stoddard and stuff. And Donald Trump's father was in the chapter. So I'll let people draw the connection and stuff. And when I look at another thing I wanted to talk about with, you know, when Chuck Schumer got up and was talking about Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same thing with the Laban serum. This is about taking land, living space. That land that is in the northern part of God, that his intention is never to give that back. And what's happening in the West Bank is Lebensraum, where you have settlers moving in. and you see the same concept that was applied to the Native Americans under
yep.
Andrew Jackson and
Testify.
Adolf Hitler into the East, Laban Serum, and we need to recognize it and talk about what's happening in the West Bank as it relates to that sort of thing. So there is I'll round this up by saying there is unfortunately a Hitler Trump connection when you look at
which one?
When you look at, I'm talking about Lothrop Stoddard connection.
Oh yeah,
that one.
Well, that's a serious one. You gave us quite a history lesson on that last night, and I thank you for it.
Right. So I just wanted to see how it comes back when he talks about Andrew, when he said Andrew Jackson was a good guy. I mean, we know what books Donald Trump has been reading, and more of that.
Amen.
I wish media would do their research and stuff. I wish the folks would, the Palestinian people would do their and talk about Laban Serum and
yep.
where it comes from. Andrew
right
Jackson.
On.
That's what
thank
we
you
have.
So much, Norm.
Okay,
thank you. It's
thank
a pleasure.
You,
really appreciate it. You know what that clip Norm's talking about? It actually is. It's more disgusting than you think. This is Donald Trump. He gets credit for his use of the English language. He's like a jazz artist here, but he's saying how nobody has been treated like Trump in terms of badly. And he cites Andrew Jackson, the man behind the Trail of Tears. Here's former host of Celebrity Apprentice.
Are you ever lonely?
So I was, over the years, I love history, I study history, and I was always told that Andrew Jackson, as a president, was treated the absolute worst. He was just really lambasted. And I heard Abraham Lincoln was second, but he was in a thing called the Civil War, so you can understand that. But Andrew Jackson was really, really treated badly. In fact, his wife died during the process. I mean, a lot of people say she died because of the way they were treated. I mean, she was heartbroken and broken
that?
In so many other ways.
People are all saying that.
And
a man came up to me, tears in his eyes. He said, "Mr. President, Andrew Jackson's wife died because she was treated poorly."
Andrew Jackson's wife died of smallpox.
Yeah, that she got because people were mean.
I heard that for years.
Yeah.
Even last night I was saying it. I said, I don't care, Andrew Jackson or anybody else, nobody has, when you think of the fake things, nobody's been treated like Trump in terms of badly.
Yeah. Jackson's first wife died of smallpox. His second wife died of a heart attack. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, but Donald Trump is saying that Andrew Jackson, the man behind the Trail of Tears, y'all, was treated very badly. And this is the same Donald Trump who said a couple of years ago on Sirius XM, he said, had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. And he was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there is no reason for this. Andrew Jackson died 16 years before the Civil War started. That is Donald Trump talking about history. You realize Donald Trump is the reason Harriet Tubman still isn't on the $20 bill? And you realize Donald Trump moved the Martin Luther King bust out of the Oval Office but hung a portrait of Andrew Jackson, who slaughtered so many Indians. But Biden's old with a stutter. We're going to take a very quick break. This is Sirius XM Progress. Good God Almighty on a pogo stick. This man is so dumb, and the dumb outmatches the evil on some days. This is Sirius XM. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Next week, Tig Notaro joins our show for the very first time. We recorded an excellent conversation today. She is delightful, and we are at 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT. So Aaron Rodgers, Chris, how did you feel when you heard that Bobby Kennedy Jr. announced that an NFL quarterback who really doesn't like COVID vaccines was on his short list for vice president? I think, why not just be on brand as much as possible?
I mean, it makes such little sense that it makes perfect sense, right? For like the RFK Jr. campaign.
If you're just going for the Joe Rogan anti-vax dude bro demographic, then yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. And it's not going to steal votes from Biden.
Right. A famously very vote conscious demographic. You always see those guys are always first at the polling place.
Very much so. I mean, well, Joe Rogan, to his credit, has done so much for voter registration and, you know, getting people
out.
Like,
he's literally trying to appeal to the demographic of, like, the guys I used to work with who were just like, oh, it's election day? Eh, screw that, dude. I'm so tired after work. No way.
That's it. I mean, but it's so confusing because it seems like Bobby Kennedy's doing this to marginalize his own popularity or just doing it to send a signal out one last time to that Joe Rogan voting block before he picks a safe, moderate person as a running mate. But I mean, he's being staked by a lot of foreign money and some black-hearted douchebags from Mike Flynn to Steve Bannon to try to kneecap Biden in the swing states and just shave a few votes off here, shave a few votes off there. But you heard the new thing that Pamela Brown of CNN shared? Well, she was at the Kentucky Derby about 10 years ago, and she met Aaron Rodgers there. And this is not a crackpot. She's CNN's chief investigative correspondent. And she came forward. Now that he's on the shortlist for VP, she has shared a story of a conversation she had at the Derby in 2013, where he was very specifically and pointedly just quoting Alex Jones over and over again. And he confronted her because she said she was a CNN journalist, and he demanded that she start reporting about the fact that the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting was an inside job. And the media was ignoring the facts, and there were no children that were killed, and all the parents were actors. And she said, can you prove that? And he spouted all these false examples that Alex Jones is on the hook for lying. And she was very disturbed by it, never said anything, because, you know, what are you going to say? It's not a big deal. But someone else came forward. They wouldn't give their name, but another source that apparently is credible, but said that Roger said another time, Sandy Hook never happened. All those children never existed. They were all actors. And Aaron Rodgers' agent has not given any comment on this, but I say, bravo, Bobby. That's exactly who, I mean, Robert Blake's not available and Harvey Weinstein can't do it. So yes, Chris.
Even hearing that anecdote, I still think that Joe Lieberman and the No Labels guys are more delusional.
You may be right. Let me get one more caller in this evening. Gail is on the line from one of my favorite towns of Toronto. Gail, thanks for your patience. You're on hold. I mean, you're online with SiriusXM. What's up?
Hi, John. I'll make it quick.
Hi.
I just a couple of comments.
Please.
Been watching you since you came on the show, and I remember when you used to ride your son to school.
Yes. Wow.
And,
I sure did.
And
yes.
Yes, and when Pete Dominic, unfortunately, was taken off, and Frank was with you, and he was taken off, and it took me months to get over that. I still.
Me too.
And also, I just a couple of
points. Don't tell them Frank's back every Friday. Don't let them know Frank's back every Friday. Okay, go ahead.
I know. I love it, and I wish he was with you for the whole show, not just for a segment. I love him. And then another
two things.
If you didn't know about us in Canada, how lucky we are, abortion is legal.
I know.
I wish it would be enshrined in our constitution like France has done. Secondly, we have maternity leave. Our maternity leave is 1 year. When I had my children, my boys are 30, 38 and 35 now. It was 17 weeks, but we have maternity leave, and the father can also take it if he wants.
That was my question, because my brother-in-law is Canadian. How much time does the father get off when a child is born?
Well, I think they can split it. I'm not 100% sure. The father can take it all if he wants. They can split it 6 and 6, 6 months, let's say 6 months. I'm not exactly sure how that works. And an additional 6 months can be taken on top of the year. There's an adjustment to your benefits, but...
Oh, I see.
It's still a lot more than what we had. And
yeah.
I just want to have a question. Reading
Please.
That this summer, they say that Trump could be getting, what do they call it, the national security briefings? He could start
Perhaps.
Getting that this summer.
Yes.
I'm wondering, why does the new president not start getting them from the election until an inauguration? Why does it have to start?
But that's a good question. They do it because they presume that the nominee of both parties may become president, and it is in their interest to be aware of the situations going on in the country. So if they become the president, they will be prepared. But you can look to see a lot of national security experts coming out publicly to say that Donald Trump should not get these briefings. And I'll tell you what, I think they should give him the briefings, but give him false information and wait and see if it turns up in a Russian transcripts anywhere, because you know he's selling it, right? Gail, I thank you so much for the call. We gotta go, but I thank you. Please, I love Toronto, and I love your call. Call us anytime. Thanks to all of our guests. Thank you, Thea. Thank you, Chris. We'll see you tomorrow, and I'll see you tomorrow morning on Stephanie Miller. Peace.